If you're anything like me, your inbox is a mess. I used to spend hours sorting through emails trying to find that one thread or task buried under a mountain of newsletters and noise. I can't stand it. That's why I started using Notion Mail. And honestly, it's been one of the most game-changing things that we have done. Notion Mail is the inbox that thinks like you, automated, personalized, and flexible to finally work the way you work. With AI that learns what matters to you, it can organize your inbox, label messages, draft replies, and even schedule meetings. No manual sorting required. It actually connects with the rest of my workspace, so my messages, tasks, and notes are all in sync. I've never felt more on top of communication. Get Notion Mail for free right now at notion.com/founders and try the inbox that thinks like you. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/founders to get Notion Mail for free right now. When you use our link, you're supporting our show. Notion.com/founders.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Founder Story. Today we have a special guest because it's the first time that this person is entrepreneur or serial entrepreneur on sabbatical. David Royce, I mean, you've done incredible things. Building a company with $500 million in revenue, fastest company in America many times, buying companies, exit companies, and now you're on sabbatical as an entrepreneur, which I think is almost the dream of everyone. I think every entrepreneur dreams of one day doing that, and you've achieved it. So I can't wait to dive into every learning, every experience you've had. But first, David, what was the spark for entrepreneurship, and then why that specific industry?
Yeah, so it goes all the way back to college. I was a starving student, working my way through college, trying to figure out how to pay for college. And I had a friend come to me and say, "Hey, what are you doing this summer?" I went out last summer to Northern California, and I sold pest control services door to door, and I made about $25,000. That's about 24, 25 years ago. So that's about $50,000 in today's money. And I thought, dang, for a college student, that sounds amazing. So I went out. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. Went out, drove out to Sacramento, California. And I was horrible as a salesperson when I started. It was a disaster. I didn't sell anything for the whole first week. Other people are selling, 1 to 4 sales a day. And I got really worried. I went to a Barnes & Noble, for those that don't know, it's a bookstore. And I bought like maybe half a dozen sales books. And I just started reading for about an hour and a half every single day to try to figure out how to do this. And something clicked. And by the end of the summer, I was the top rookie in the entire company. And then the next year, I went back again because I was so successful. I managed a sales team. And I went to work for a smaller company. And the smaller company didn't have a training manual. And so I actually asked the boss, I said, "Hey, do you mind if I write a training manual? I want my team members to do really well." And he was super impressed with that. And by the end of the summer, our sales team had sold about twice as much as the other sales teams that he had. And at the end of the summer, he goes, "Hey, how would you feel about becoming like the director of our sales program? Like becoming like a vice president of sales. You create all the training and I'll give you a cut off every single person in the company if you get them to sell, similar to how you guys sold at the, that previous summer." And so I was like, "Yeah, that's amazing." By the end of my college career, I did it for another couple summers. I made $225,000. So it's like almost $500,000 in today's money. Like that's how much I was making per year doing this job. I had about 100 salespeople that I recruited, trained, or oversaw the management of. And then I go to my boss and I'm like, hey, I want to get into investment banking. I've been studying finance in college. I'm about to graduate. And he just looks at me and he goes, what are you doing? Why on earth would you go work 80-100-hour weeks for somebody else? Like, you're so good at this. You should go start your own business. And it hadn't even crossed my mind before. It was just, I thought, well, it's not as sophisticated. You know, I've been studying. I'm a college graduate. You know, investment banking was like the thing to go do if you could get that job in business right out of school. It paid the most. You know, it was a total grind. But yeah, it took me a while to come around to it. It was a complete 180 from what I thought I was going to do. But I realized I had learned the business really well, and he was actually selling his company and going to take some time off. So yeah, I ultimately decided to go for it and started my first company in Southern California.
Fascinating story. It's like an accidental entrepreneur, no intention to do so. Building. How important do you feel it is then for people to work at a job or work in some sort of industry and then become an entrepreneur? Because we have both. We have some people that worked, then became some people that never even had a job that are like, I only want to be a business owner, but I am a big proponent of working for a company and learning skills. But how important was that for you?
I'm 100% behind you. Absolutely. Like, I don't think there's any substitute for real world experience, especially in an industry. I mean, I know, like, I would be much more willing to invest in a company where the entrepreneur had already worked in that industry because they already know what they're doing. Like, you're not paying for them to learn on your dime per se. So I would, like, here's a good example. So with franchise, well, 80% of businesses, I think, fail in 5 years. That's typically the stats I hear. But franchises, right? It's like those numbers flip. Only 10 to 20% of franchises fail. And the reason is they already have their best practices set up. They already have, you know, financial targets. They already have the key metrics that you're supposed to be following from an operations perspective. And it totally de-risked the business. And so if somebody has experience, especially if they go out and they become really great at that industry, to transition is not that hard to go start a new business. See, I totally 100% agree with you.
So you start this company or you buy this. Did you buy the company from him?
No. What I did initially, he tried to get me to go just start my own company. And I was definitely worried. I was concerned because I knew the statistics of the likelihood of success in starting your own business. And so then he said, well, what if I invest into you as a silent investor? And I said, okay, that's great. I could grow faster and make more money. And then he said, you know, why don't when he sold his business, he just sold off the assets. So he actually kept his company name and he sold off really just the customer base and the technician base. And he said, hey, if you want to even take the company name, you can license the company name from me and go start it that way. So I used his company name and then used his money to go start my own company.
What a unique approach. I really like that. Really is the accidental entrepreneur. So fast forward to you starting to see success. When you get to that $1 million, let's say $2 or $3 million in revenue, what did you have to change to get to that point?
You know, for us, because I already had the model, I mean, we hit $2 or $3 million the first year. Like, we were running super, super fast. And that was one of the reasons I realized I needed growth capital. But then we almost went bankrupt the first year because we grew too fast. But we have to pay out commissions in advance of all the revenue coming in. And I actually had to go to some of my top salespeople and say, hey, can I, you know, hold off a couple months to pay you? I'll pay you 10% interest on your money, but I need a little bit of time to be able to get that to you. Otherwise, you know, we just did a lot better than we had anticipated originally. So money is like so key in growth, right? And it's one of the reasons why that first business, I realized I had to sell the business in order to get the money to grow even faster, or at least keep up with the same rate of growth, and to kind of de-risk that, you know, any potential danger of going bankrupt again.
Wow. Our first business was e-commerce. And no matter how big we grew, it looked great from the outside, but all of our money was tied up in the inventory and all these different things. And it was very stressful. So what were those moments for you in terms of as you growing and as you started to learn the financials? Because I think a lot of companies, like the 80%, many times they're going out of business because of something related to finance.
Yeah, I'd say that I had a unique advantage in my specific industry. You know, pest control is not a very sexy industry. I always joke that there's not a lot of MBAs running into pest control. And having a finance degree was very unique for somebody in that particular blue collar industry. And so having finance, I understood it. The thing I had to understand was how to take the foot off the gas a little bit to make sure that, you know, we didn't ultimately go bankrupt, that we could grow in a solid and steady manner. Then how do you find the capital to continue to do that? But that first company is very much like working in a lab too, right? Like you're learning the operations, you're totally involved in the day-to-day, you're still working, training the salespeople. But I was also very cautious not to be too engaged in the day-to-day. I wanted to kind of be overseeing it all, learning it, trying new things. I worked at the bigger company that I first worked at was a $100 million company. And so I had that experience in my background. And then I worked at the smaller company. And then I asked my boss too, I said, tell me all the things you would change or work on. Tell me all your problems so that we can make, that I can go make the bottle better. And with those different things, and then also with my finance degree, I felt like I had a really great advantage to get a head start in the industry. And it gave me that confidence to, you know, build multiple companies and continue to scale.
Do you think a big part of your success was humility? I don't know if you can, you know, a lot of people, they may not listen to others, even those that are more successful, because maybe they think they know everything. But it sounds like you were very open to feedback, to understanding. You were open to asking the right questions. Do you think that played a big part into the continued success you had?
Yeah, I definitely do, in the sense that I think only the paranoid survive. You know, I know Bill Gates used to say that a lot. And there's always somebody out there, you know, with a better business model, making more money than you, smarter, you know, greater IQ than you have. And so I think you got to stay calm, you know, and stay humble, continually be looking for new ways to improve the business, no matter what business you are. You know, I've heard this saying that, you know, there's three different stages of business. There's a startup, there's a scale up, and there's a screw up. You know, and it's like, how do you make sure that you, you know, never get to that screw up phase? And the way you do it is you continually to evolve. You know, I love the phrase, if you're not growing, you're dying. And if you think about it, like the Fortune 500 list, I think it was created in 1955. And of all those 500 companies that are on there today, you know, 70 years later or whatever, there's only 10% of the companies are still on that list. And so to me, that's like a real testament of, you've got to stay on your toes. You have to stay on your game. You can't just rest on your laurels no matter how big you get, because ultimately you don't want to fall into that screw up phase, you know, become a dinosaur or potentially go out of business.
Yeah, you mentioned the bookstore. I was in my hometown recently, and I drove by where they used to have the video stores, and I had to laugh. I'm like, oh my gosh, like look at all this whole places. None of these big corporations exist anymore. None of the retail stores, they're all gone. And I was really fascinated, but I like that only the paranoid will survive. So when you became, you know, $100 million, $300, $400, $500 million, what had to change within you? And then what had to change within the organization?
Yeah. So I'd say like when we were going from kind of a regional company in that $100 million, $200 million range, and you're trying to become a real national player, the hardest thing was looking for really smart people to join the organization. And the most difficult thing I ever had to do was to switch out my original executive team and level up to experienced executives who had worked at billion-dollar companies to come in and then help us go, okay, how do you scale, you know, at this level? Yeah, more than anything, that was really it. I think, you know, a lot of scaling is just, it's funny, it's so simple in my mind, because it's taking all your best practices that made you great as a single location, and it's wrapping them into like beautiful policy and procedure manuals, great training videos, you know, having a culture that you build out. But otherwise, it's just, you know, for us, it was just a bunch of trucks and, you know, equipment and chemicals and computers or whatever. So yeah, I guess I'm trying to remember where I'm even going with that, but the scaling part's not so bad. It's really like the people. That's the most important asset you have in the business. Having great friends around
you, for from other people successful as well, like yourself, that the people that got you here are not the people that are going to get you there. And that's many times the changes they need to make. When you look at happiness and you go back to, you know, just out of college, what made you happy then? When, you know, you saw success in your business, what made you happy then? And then now you're on sabbatical. What makes you happy now? And what do you think changed when it came to what makes you happy?
It's a really good question. You know, there's so many different stages in a business in terms of growing it, right? And in many ways, I was probably happiest in the early days when I didn't know a lot. And I was trying to figure out, you know, solutions to all these different problems and building and really seeing massive change. Because a lot of the change later, it becomes more incremental, you know, because you've really got your business model already dialed in. But it's almost like that thrill. It's kind of like when a basketball game is really close versus, you know, one team's just, it's a total blowout and the other team's killing them by 30 and you're like, all right, it's almost boring, right? You're going to go home early before the game's even over. We got to that phase. And so I think the most fun part is it's those early years that it's exciting. I do think that a lot of entrepreneurs, we get addicted to the dopamine hits. It's like doing lots of things, like working crazy 14, 60 hour days. Like I loved it. It was so much fun. It's like, for me, it's like a sport. Like that's my sport of choice was business. But when you stop, every time I stopped, sold a company, and then had a gap in between the next one, you know, although I may have been starting to ramp up the next company, I definitely felt like a loss and I was bored and not as happy. I've had, in fact, when I would take vacations, even when I was working, I couldn't like slow down. Like in the mornings, I'd have to wake up and work 3 or 4 hours. Part of it was feeling like I had to set the example to other people, even when they weren't around. But I did realize too, it's just like you get addicted to the dopamine and feeling like you're productive. And eventually you kind of have to pull your self-worth out of that. Like you got to take your ego out of the business and go, hey, I can just like, it's a good thing to be able to relax and just sit on a beach and read a book and be totally comfortable doing that. And so it took me time and I'm much better off now. Like I'm not like going through massive withdrawals. I do have the excitement of, okay, I'm curious about what's next, but I've told myself I'm going to take at least 1 year off to really be intentional about it, think about it and, you know, no rush.
I've heard this before from people as well. When they sell the company, they really get depressed and you'd think that would be the happiest moment that they hit success, they're financially free, but yet they get quite depressed. I also like what you said, almost ignorance is bliss. It's almost better to not know what to expect when you're younger, when you're in the, like, if you knew how hard things were going to be in the company, you may not have done it from the start. I'm really interested to burnout. There's a whole topic now around, can an entrepreneur be really successful and really navigate not working too much? Is it even possible? Some say, yes, you can do that now with technology or outsourcing or whatever. And then others say, absolutely not. If you really want to see a huge level of success, you are going to have to grind 24/7.
Yeah. You know, I would say I never got burnt out because of the work. I loved to work. In fact, the only reason I started to slow down was because I started to have a family and started having children. And my wife really needed somebody else there. It's like, hey, can you come home a little earlier than, you know, 9 or 10 o'clock at night? We had this really crazy lifestyle where we got married pretty young. And we were married for 10 and a half years before we had children. And she was a securities fraud litigator. She went to law school and then it was a lawyer for a bunch of years. And I was working, you know, building companies. And so it worked out perfect where we could both really focus on our careers. And then we'd come home, you know, late at night, be together. And then once we had kids, like threw it all up in there, it was a whole different ballgame. So I think you can. The thing where I probably got burnt out the most, it was certainly around after my third business, I just felt like I wasn't learning anything new. So we'd expanded into maybe 2,000 plus cities. And I'm just like, you know what? Like I'm not really learning that much. I'm going to get myself even further out of the day to day. I'm going to spend more time with my family. I'm going to take some chips off the table. I'm going to have plenty of money to be able to grow the next business. And I'm going to put my a CEO in place to be able to run that. So I think it's really important to know how you're feeling and not get completely burnt out to the point where you're just like, I don't want to do this anymore, but how can I still continue on with the business, put people in those positions to do the work maybe that I don't want to do if it's no longer helping me grow.
You mentioned earlier about if you were to invest in someone, you know, you would hope that they would be, let's say, working in their industry. Let's say you now are at a point where people might be coming to you, or maybe they already are, because they want, you know, hoping that you would invest into their company. For those people that are trying to get an investor, what do they need to know from an investor's perspective? Is it the right pitch deck? Is it proving the right thing? What specifically would you say are the things that you look for if you are going to invest in someone?
You know, so I really enjoy investing in entrepreneurs who already have a track record. So that makes it hard for brand new entrepreneurs that maybe haven't done something. But if they have worked in an industry and they're like, hey, I want to go start this company. I was at the very top at what I did there. I can transfer that into a business. I just need the capital. I already understand, you know, best practices and that sort of thing. That would make me much more likely to do that. I think anybody can create a slide deck, you know, sexy, high tech, and we're going to make this much. But the reality is you bet on people, you know, not just best, you know, not just a business model, because I think there's millions of ideas. I think like our business world is littered with good ideas executed poorly. Right. And so it's the team ultimately that you're investing in, not really the product or service spec. I think there's a lot of products or services out there right now that they weren't the very best product or service, but they had the best go-to-market strategy or, you know, the best team behind them, and they made it work.
Looking at yourself, thinking about other people that you know that have been successful in business, is there a trait or a few traits that you say, okay, really successful entrepreneurs typically have these traits? And also the reason why I say this is I am not the firm believer that everyone can be a successful entrepreneur. I think anyone can start a business for sure. But I really do feel that, like, I wouldn't even say that I'm necessarily a successful entrepreneur. I always say my wife is just because I have a lot of hard times with dealing with some of the mental game in business. I'm just not really cut out for everything. But what would you say are some traits that you see that most successful people have besides being crazy enough to think of or being crazy enough to do something? Remove that one. Anything else that you think?
Yeah, you got to be a lifelong learner, right? So reading is key. And I have ADHD. So to be honest, I audible everything. Every once in a while, I'll find a book that I can't actually audible. But I usually consume at least 2 books a month. And for honestly, about 15 years, the only books I read were business books. So I read hundreds, maybe 1,000 plus books at this point. And you know, business is always changing. Right. Like, so, you know, technology is changing. Now we have like AI getting integrated into everybody's business model, like software is eating the world, they say. But there's always new techniques, and that's why you've always got to be evolving. So it's part of that philosophy of, you know, evolve or die. You've got to find ways to keep growing, to keep learning. And I don't know if you have that attitude. I think that talent is directly proportional to desire. And so if you're continually passionate to continue to read or about your business or whatever, I think you can learn a lot of those skills. That's a big question. I know Andreessen Horowitz, for example, likes to really invest in entrepreneurs and try to teach them leadership skills so they can continue to actually run the business, because they believe that the founders are the best people to run the business because they know it, you know, Six Flags till Sunday. So yeah, I think there's a lot. I don't think everybody can do it. You know, I think some people maybe lose their passion or just get like the thrown.
You ever get stuck at checkout and suddenly feel like you're back in 2003? I was in this coffee shop the other day. Their system froze when I went to pay. Staff panicked. I ended up walking out empty-handed. I was so annoyed. That's why I love businesses that use Square. There's a dessert shop that I go to right in Irvine. And with Square, the checkout is always instant. Tap, swipe, done. Even if the Wi-Fi goes down, Square keeps running. Sleek, easy to use, and built to grow with your business. Whether you're selling online, at a pop-up, or managing multiple locations, which I have done in the past, you need something like Square. And the best thing is it makes it simple. From payments to inventory reporting to customer loyalty, which is everything, Square keeps up so you don't have to slow down. Get everything you need to run and grow your business without any long-term commitments. And why wait? Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square Hardware at square.com/go/founder. That's square.com/go/founder. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today. One of the best things I've ever done for my personal growth was picking up a new language. Whether you're traveling, leveling up your career, or just love learning, speaking another language opens up many doors, and Rosetta Stone makes it easier, more immersive, more fun. It's the leading language learning program available right on your desktop or mobile. Rosetta Stone helps you learn naturally, just like you picked up your first language. through real world context and conversation, just practical skills you can use right away. What I love most is the true accent speech recognition. It gives you real-time feedback so your pronunciation actually sounds like a native speaker. With 30 years experience, millions of learners in 25 languages to choose from, like Spanish, also Tagalog, which I'm learning. Rosetta Stone is the go-to for anyone serious about learning fast and retaining it long-term. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Founder Story listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. Starting your business should be simple. That's why I love what Northwest Registered Agent is doing. You can build your entire business identity in just 10 clicks and 10 minutes. Seriously, whether you're launching your first company or your fifth, you get more when you start with Northwest. More privacy, more guidance, and more freedom to run your business from anywhere. They've helped businesses grow for nearly 30 years, and they've got your back. For just $39 plus state fees, Northwest will form your business, create a custom website, and set up a local presence anywhere you need it. Want more? They'll protect your identity by using their address on your formation documents, and their premium mail forwarding gives you a real business address that keeps your home info private, which I have used this service for many years. Don't wait. Protect your privacy, build your brand, and set up your business in just 10 clicks in 10 minutes. Visit northwestregisteredagent.com/founders and start building something amazing. Get more with Northwest Registered Agent at northwestregisteredagent.com/founders.
The towel too early. But that was never my mentality. It's just like this obsession to continue, to keep going, to keep learning. And if it's fun, you know, you're not going to stop. College was really frustrating for me. And honestly, all education was really frustrating for me. Until I got into my business classes, it was, you know, just really tough to like go to class and be excited to learn, because I didn't understand how it transferred to the business world or how to make money in life. But when I got in my business classes, my economics classes, even my business law classes, and I couldn't get enough of it. It was great. I wish I'd taken just, you know, 4 or 5 years of straight business, because I feel like I would have been a better entrepreneur. I don't think you can judge people based, you know, if they don't have passion for something. It's I think it's pointless. So I feel sad for everybody who goes to school or college. They drop out early. Like, this isn't me. And maybe just didn't find what you're passionate about. I think we need more flexibility to be able to learn what we want to learn.
That was me, David. I dropped out. My wife made me go back because she said she wouldn't marry me unless I had a college degree. I just wanted to put no degree. I wanted a license plate that said no degree on a Lamborghini or Ferrari. That was my goal in life. That's all I wanted, just to prove the point. But I'm with you. I took two things away there. Really important. Desire. So important. How much are you willing? Yeah, how much do you want to win, or how much do you want to succeed? Reminds me of, if you look at like the most successful athletes, they typically have more desire to win than the ones, because their skills might be the same, but how much do you want it? That's amazing. This has been great, by the way. One last question for you is this. You have a class, you're at college. And the reason why I bring this up too, is you mentioned college, and I'm glad you bring that up. I'm glad you bring up college, because there's, I think a lot of Gen Z, I'm not sure if they want to go to college anymore, but if they can go to college and take the right courses, it makes sense. But you're sitting there, you're a professor right now, a business professor. You have these college students in front of you, and you have to tell them one takeaway that you think would be critical for them in their life. What would it be?
I would say, don't let anybody label you. Don't think that whatever job you take the first time has to be what you're going to do for the rest of your life. You know, there's like this trajectory. People come out of college, or they take a major, and then they decide, okay, I'm going to go get into this. But people have different passions, and passions change as we evolve over life and we grow, you know? And so especially if you're going to become an entrepreneur, maybe you choose a field and it doesn't go well, but you go start another business. I have friends who have sold or have got, you know, they went through maybe 3 companies and failed at all 3 of them. And it was the 4th one that hit, or the 5th one. And then they built a $1 billion company. So Yeah, just because whatever you do right out of college, like, be willing to change, be willing to move around if needed to find what you can be really good at, you know, and beware of passion. Sometimes I think it's important to have passion, and I think you can build passion around something that you're good at. You know, so pest control, I wasn't passionate about it initially, but because I got in the top 1% of 1% in sales, then I got really excited about it. And then I learned how to leverage, you know, that skill set and go, you know, build something really big. But beware of passion too, because, you know, there's so many industries out there. I call them passion industries. Like, you know, and that might be anything from just like even the restaurant business, which has really tough margins, or Hollywood, you know, or music or whatever else. And unless you're really, really good, you got to be the same thing, top 1% of 1% in those industries, it's really, really hard to make money, especially if you're paying for college, you know, with a degree in that specific field. Yeah, really, really tough to pay off your college loans.
That's exactly why I will never open a restaurant. That I really, really like that. I think that's great. I think a lot of young people need to hear that. They need to understand that just because you go to school for one thing doesn't mean you need to do that. Plus, like you, look at that. Your finance helped you and all these other courses helped you. It's like Steve Jobs, you know, with his, he didn't go to college, but he did classes.
Right.
And that helped him do different things. So it's like how you can apply certain learnings and certain courses into business, you know, sounds like that's been an incredible part of your journey. This has been great. I really enjoyed the conversation. I don't know if you want people to reach out to you, but if you would want people to reach out to you, maybe they can help you figure out what you're going to do after sabbatical. How can they do so?
Yeah, just reach out to me on LinkedIn.
Easy. There it is. Dejan Royce, this has been great. I learned a lot. I got a lot of sound bites today, a lot of quotes that I'm going to quote you on, but I really appreciate your time. And thank you so much for joining us on Founder Story.
Yeah, happy to help. Thanks so much for the invite, Daniel.
What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.
If you're looking for legit ways to make extra money, you've got to check out The Side Hustle Show. With hundreds of actionable episodes to choose from, you'll learn what's working now from real people making real money. Like the Utah mom who built a six-figure business playing video games, or the guy earning $3,000 a month renting out mobility scooters. Online or offline, from Amazon to your own hometown, from YouTube to vending machines, The Side Hustle Show has you and your wallet covered. Subscribe to The Side Hustle Show wherever you're listening to this podcast and increase your earning power today.